this is Armox, Cosmic Invader. I have successfully hijacked the Carolyn and Joe show again. This week I bring to you the Baltimore Comic Con Team Cool Disact panel, recorded on Saturday, September 8th, 2012. Here's my Earthflame, Agnes, to tell you about it.
When Richard Thompson, the creator of the comic strip Cul-de-sac, was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, his friend Chris Sparks began a fundraising effort to honor him. With Richard's support, he asked others to donate artwork featuring the Cul-de-sac characters for a book, with proceeds going to the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research. Now, join Chris Sparks and other members of Team Cul-de-sac, including Steve Conley, Matt Dambicki, S.L. Gallant, Roger Langridge, Don Griffin, Carolyn Belitsky, and others as they discuss the project and their continuing efforts to raise funds in Richard's name.
Enjoy the discussion and congratulations to Richard Thompson, this year's Harvey Award winner, Best Syndicated Strip or Panel.
Hey folks, thanks for coming. My name's Mike Rohde. I run a blog called Comics DC, and I was drafted a few minutes ago to moderating this. Let's see, starting on this end is Chris Sparks, the organizer of Team Cul-de-sac.
Hi.
Matt Dambicki, one of the artists. Steve Conley, one of the artists. Carolyn Belitsky, one of the artists. These three are from the Washington area and know Richard personally. Sorry, ma'am.
Don Griffin.
Thank you. And at the end is Shannon Gallant, another cartoonist. People do a wide variety of stuff. Shannon does G.I. Joe. Carolyn does webcomics. Steve has done comic books and a webcomic. Matt tends to package successful anthologies these days. Chris is a lunatic website designer. And Dawn?
I do webcomics and kids' books.
Webcomics and kids' books, okay.
Then where did Donna Lewis go?
She heard you were speaking, so she ran out.
Okay. So Donna's in the book, and she's syndicated, and
Joe Sutliff is in the book.
Roger will be here momentarily.
Okay, and Roger Langridge is going to come up as well. So I guess I'll just keep standing up.
I can sit over there.
We can put more chairs.
You are probably here because you know Richard Thompson. You know Richard Thompson's work. A few years back, Richard went to his first Comics Con, which was Heroes Con down in Charlotte. And Chris walked in and asked, "Who are you?" And in the middle of the panel, because he has no shame of that way. And became friends with Richard, set up his website. Then Richard was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. So Chris started thinking about what he could do. So why don't you take Chris, tell people what you were coming up with.
And I was not direct on met Richard, even though that's the rumor from Richard. So after I found out Richard had Parkinson's, he made such an impact on me in 2008. I thought it would be great to do something to not only honor Richard, but also to raise money for the Michael J. Fox Foundation, who does a wonderful job not only for research, but also to educate the public. And so I was actually reading Michael J. Fox's book, Always Looking Up, about not only with him being Parkinson's and how he decided to form the Michael J. Fox Foundation. And I was so inspired halfway through it, I looked over to my wife one night and said, "I have this idea, I'm gonna do a fundraiser where artists can donate artwork and we'll auction it off and I'll get it put into a book to raise money for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. If Richard goes along with it, because one thing when you have something like Parkinson's, it's hard to be put out in the public eye if you don't want to be. I need to know what Richard thought about it." And Richard's response was, "I think it's a great idea. As long as I don't have to organize anything, I'm all for it." Because Richard's known to be a little tardy on deadlines. And so it was all up to me. He gave me any contact information I needed, but then it was up to me. And Mike was very wonderful to help too.
So let me interrupt here and say that at first Richard did not want his characters used. So at Baltimore Comic Con 2 years ago, we were walking around just asking people to either donate or do artwork, and several people volunteered at that point. That's probably where we hit you, Roger. So we started hitting up people. J.K. Snyder, who's downstairs, agreed to do it while he was here. Sergio Aragonis agreed to do it while he was here. And now I will turn it back. Chris and I finally talked Richard into being letting people use his characters.
Because they're fun to do. And one thing we realized One of my goals was if everyone had a chance to get out of their box, if it was a comic strip or a comic book, and do something different, they would be more enticed to, you know, show something they'd never done before. But they were having trouble coming up with ideas. So these people needed something that, you know, they were interested in. And everyone who wanted to do something was interested in a cul-de-sac, and they all loved Richard. So once they had something to focus on, it flowed. I mean, it was great.
Right, it helped a lot more because before it was, how do you draw Parkinson's? And nobody was too eager to be doing that. So let's go away from us and start asking people how they decided to be involved and what they wanted to do. And since Dawn has been coming up for us, twice I've had to ask her name. Dawn, how did you get involved?
Well, I've always wanted to be a syndicated cartoonist, mm-hmm. and that's been a dream of mine since I was a little kid. And so I'm always keeping up with what's syndicated with some newspapers. And throughout my career as a cartoonist, I started going towards webcomics and doing it myself because of the dwindling nature of newspapers at this time. But still keeping an eye on what is getting out there and what's new and refreshing and exciting. And I loved cul-de-sac, and I'd buy all the books immediately when they come out. And I loved it, the quirky nature of the characters. And they're not cookie cutter. It's not the standard, stereotypical cartoon character. So I loved that. I loved that it was different. And when I heard about the project, I can't imagine what it's like to lose control over your favorite thing to do in life, to be able to draw, and not being able to do that. I just, you know, my sympathy went out to Richard for that. So, I really wanted to submit something. So I put together what best I could, and I've done plenty of cameos and guest comics for other webcomic people, but this is a chance to do it for someone who's syndicated, and I thought this is a great opportunity. So. Submitted it, and I was thrilled to hear it was going to be in the book.
Thank you very much for doing that. Sure. Steve, you've probably known Richard long. It's still on the panel. How did you get involved? How did you decide what you wanted to draw?
Well, I've known Richard for a few years. I worked at USA Today about 20 years ago-ish, and through that I knew Nick Galifianakis, and through him I know Richard. I've known him for a long time. Getting involved was like a no-brainer because I've loved Richard's work forever, and I think everyone in the DC area is familiar with it in one form or another, if not cul-de-sac, then through Richard's Poor Almanac. The opportunity to contribute was, I couldn't pass that up. I kind of copped out since my drawing is basically the words cul-de-sac, but it's those crazy, somehow scary tubes that at the playground that Richard draws. He makes them ominous, and so that's always been hilarious to me. And so spilling it out, I don't know. That's where it came from. I didn't want to introduce my own characters because that seemed to, I don't know, it didn't seem right. Richard's just in a whole other league. My characters rubbing elbows with his characters just doesn't make sense to me at all. So that's why I did it.
Okay. Let's keep jumping people and go to Roger, a New Zealand cartoonist by way of England.
Yeah.
Not a typical cul-de-sac person, perhaps.
Well, no, I've never seen it in the newspaper for a start. I've only seen the collections. Newspaper students just aren't a big thing. I got into cul-de-sac mainly through meeting Richard at my home in SPX a few years ago. And I was just impressed with the guy. I thought he was really... intelligent and funny and kind, he didn't talk much, but when he did, it was always bang, you know, he'd hit the nail on the head and say it just this sneaky, subtle, funny way. So I checked out his work on the strength of liking the man, and I fell in love with it. I mean, it sort of gave me hope for newspaper comics. It was something that actually looked like it had been drawn by a human hand, which is really rare in the newspapers these days. When I was asked to contribute finding out about Richard's condition and everything, it just seemed, the least I could do.
And was there a reason you picked a Little Nemo?
My love of old newspaper strips and the chance to try on a different style. Mm-hmm. And I've done Little Nemo riffs a few times in the past, so there was, I felt it was something I could do reasonably well to start with, so that kind of, because when you're playing with somebody else's characters, you want you want to do them justice. You want to you know, rise to the challenge. And so there was a certain element of, because I'm using somebody else's characters, and that's outside my comfort zone, I wanted to do something that was within my comfort zone as well, and sort of bring the two together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's jump all the way down to Shannon Gallant at the end, who is best known for drawing G.I. Joe, not exactly a cul-de-sac type strip.
I actually met Richard through you and Chris.
Take the mic, little mic, real quick. Thanks.
Better. Like I said, I just met Richard through Chris and Mike, and it was like a Richard bomb had been dropped on me because I really wasn't that familiar with his work. And so then I ended up with like three of the volumes and was burning through them. And when they asked me to do something for the book, it was one of those things, everything was so fresh in my head, I couldn't think of anything except like a greatest hits. I wanted to draw everything that Richard had at one time. So it just became a greatest hits image. And because I, like Mike was saying, I draw G.I. Joe, I don't get to do anything in that sort of style. So like you were saying, it's a chance to draw outside your, like what you normally draw. And for me, it was even more so. And I love that kind of, you know, Searle style of just lines everywhere and everything just kind of builds this form that you can't control and at the same time can enjoy. And that for me was what it was. I wanted to play with that and enjoy it and really just kind of express, these are the funniest things I think are in Richard's strip. But again, what do you single in on, because everything's so damn funny. So to me it was, again, like he was in my life. He just drops in, he's such a nice guy and you love him and then you love his work. You just want to cram it all into one thing. That's what it was for me.
Carolyn?
Oh, Mike, you actually introduced me to Richard a few years ago. And it's interesting too, because looking back in my life, I remember being in elementary school, sitting in my bedroom, flipping through Washington Post magazine, and seeing Richard's art. So it's like many years ago. I've been exposed to his art for a really long time, and just being in the DC area as an artist, I've seen his art everywhere. I've seen him do stuff for the Arlington Parade, local stuff that he's done. It was a Clarendon parade, mm-hmm. or something, yeah, Mardi Gras parade. Yeah, yeah. I've seen his art like my whole life growing up in the DC area. So, but then like when I actually met him, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the guy. This is the guy that I see his art everywhere. And so it was really interesting to see that all circle around and to be a part of Team Cul-de-Sac. And I did actually choose the opposite of what Steve was saying about incorporating your characters in with the cul-de-sac.
Well, you're so good. You can get away with it. Yeah.
But I mean, I do feel like your sentiment about that too, because you know you don't want to, you know, mess up what Richard has done. But I felt like it would be cool to merge the worlds together. So I do have my characters in my contribution, and it was just a very fun project to be able to take my Curls characters and Richard's cul-de-sac characters and really intertwine them and make a small story out of it. And I also didn't want to, for my thinking behind it, I didn't want to do a pinup necessarily. Not that that's against Steve, but I wanted to actually make a story. Yeah. But actually, Steve's is my personal favorite in the whole cul-de-sac book. So, but yeah, there's a lot of really great contributions, and I love everybody's style, and the whole project is just like really well done, straight up to like the book design and holding it in your hands. So like everything that Chris has done, from like a technical aspect of just managing this whole project is really great. Like, I mean, it is so much effort behind the scenes, and I think a lot of people don't realize how hard it is. They just like have the book drop in their hands, like, oh, just drop from the sky, and like this looks great. But a lot of planning really did go on behind the scenes, and it's a great project.
The book is gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
Herding cartooning cats. Not
easy. We'll ask you a little bit more about that in a while. Let's go ahead and how Matt got involved and how he decided what he was going to do. He picked Mr. Danders, which was not too many people did Mr. Danders.
No. I think I was doing something exact opposite. I was trying to focus instead of having encompass everything, kind of focus on one thing. And you know, I think personally I'm just kind of drawn to things that are almost like little sidebars. So I just love the way he had another story going on inside the comic strip. And so it's kind of just a nice kind of break in sidebar. And so that's why I was kind of drawn to it. And lately I've been drawing a lot of animals anyway, so that kind of attracted me to draw the hamster. And but I wanted to, you know, to kind of put it in its in context, in its world. So, so it was really just a kind of a wonderful privilege to do it. Actually, I met Richard, I think, through Mike as well. And but I'm part of a group in Washington called the DC Conspiracy. We've been around for like 7 or 8 years, and it's kind of a local comic creators collective. And we used to get together about once a month, usually at a bar, and drink some beers. And Richard's name always kind of came up, and somebody always made the suggestion, we should invite Richard here to come with us. And, you know, somebody would have more sense and say, well, Richard, it's not going to come. But, you know, he's what I really enjoy about Richard is he's so approachable. He's such a nice guy, kind of like what Roger said. And he kind of reminds me of, like, Neil Armstrong, you know, man of few words, but when he says something, it has an impact on you. And, you know, so, and he's so encouraging that when he comes to comic shows like SPX, you know, come around your table and he'll say something nice about your work, he'll, you know, buy your work, and then when you buy one of his works, he remembers you and he writes something just very sentimental that kind of, it's personal, he knows you. So, you know, that's I really enjoy working with people like that.
Okay, and the two other cartoonists here are getting dragged into this. So, Joe, why don't you either talk very loudly or come up and pull a mic towards you?
Okay, well, I talk pretty loud. Everybody here? I've actually known Richard for almost 30 years. I've had the unique privilege of having to compete with him for work. I was an illustrator cartoonist in the DC area. You know, that's not a humbling experience. Me or Richard Thompson, who do you think they're gonna hire? But, of course, when I heard about the book project, I wanted to participate in it. And unfortunately, again, because I am that scatterbrained, I somehow saw the notice and somehow got the dates mixed up on the emails and thought, oh my God, I've only got 2 days to do this. This is like 3 months before the actual deadline. So I sat down and wrote the idea for this strip while my daughter was in Taekwondo class, sitting on a little chair, like, and then came up with the idea, went home and inked it, and I thought, I have to do something. All right, Michael J. Fox, and this was during the fish slapping bear period of the strip. So somehow, fish slapping bear was here, Michael J. Fox was here, his TV show was there, and that sort of came together into the whole Michael J. Fox behind the scenes of, was it Family Ties or?
Yeah.
Family Ties, okay. And so that's how that character sort of, the whole idea gelled. And sent it off and then sat back down and realized I had 3 months to do it.
So you actually did multiple pieces for this, like Shannon did. How many did you end up with?
I wound up submitting 3 pieces, because the first one, again, I thought I had so little time and I didn't know what format the book was going to be in. So I chose to do it as like a Sunday strip format, which is very long and short, which is why it's only got like a small piece in the book, because that's all it would fit. And then the blog page started posting some of the artwork, and I realized, oh, a nice vertical single panel thing would have been much better. So I did a couple like that. And
but you followed instructions. You could actually read the instructions where a lot of people, no offense to anybody, because everything was great, they said every size you could imagine. And so we got to the point, we changed the format of the book because we did not have enough horizontal pieces. And what happened was we thought mainly it would only be newspaper cartoonists. We really didn't know how this would grow to from newspaper, web cartoonists, editorial cartoonists, book illustrators, you know, magazine illustrators. And so we just had people sending us in everything. And so that was a real challenge, and we had to change the format. I think twice to make everything work better.
And the only other interesting footnote was that all 3 of my pieces were posted on the blog, and Richard actually sent me a personal email about the one, the Totally comic strip, which was Petey and the Ernesto.
Yeah.
Yes, which we'll put up for auction, and I tried to figure out a way. Richard liked this one a lot. But I think in auction it was going for the lowest price, and Michael was the one bidding.
Yeah, but I didn't get it, so we're not.
You didn't get it. I actually put in, I said it can't go for that low, so I put in a bid of $25 or something like on it, so I have it enough. So I'm going to give it to you.
Donna Lewis does reply all for the Washington Post Writers Group. And so Donna has met Richard, like all the rest of us, and things, things are
actually through you introducing me to Chris.
Okay, there you go.
I met Mike through Richard, so that's the only thing.
Yeah, okay. So you can't blame me for this. All right, so Donna, how did you decide that you wanted to do something and what you were going to do for the book?
Actually, it was kind of karmic for me in a way that I don't know if people will relate to. I hope you will. But when I met Chris and then Richard, that was 2 years ago here at Comic-Con, I had just started the syndication. Actually, I think it was still a secret. I think it was still a secret that my comic strip was getting syndicated. Publication wasn't starting for a couple of months. So it was this secret that I had been carrying around for like forever and a day. Mike knew. And my mother knew. And I was not part of the comic world. So when I came to Baltimore Comic Con, I felt like a fish out of water because I couldn't tell anybody I was getting syndicated. I didn't know anybody. Didn't really know about the whole environment. And ironically, what I had been doing professionally for 20 years was working in disability. And so when Chris started talking about the project, the only thing I heard was disability. And I would always do anything for a disability project. So that was for me the 100% of why I contributed. And then luckily it turned out that I loved Richard, loved Cul-de-Sac. It was very easy material to work with.
Okay, thank you. So let's talk a little bit about how the art started coming in then, Chris. Why don't you give us a little bit of a hint of the excitement when you'd...
It was like Christmas, almost. It went in spells for a couple reasons. I would get emails from different people at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, because obviously cartoonists never sleep, really sleep during the day. And so I would always have my phone by the bed, and I'd always hear this beep. I'd wake up and I'd have to see, you know, who sent what. And it really went, I'm trying to remember.
You went out to Kansas City and saw...
But we already had, well, what happened was that we had some early big names. We had Lynn Johnston, who draws for Better or Worse. She was an early contributor, and that was a big deal because, you know, there's a certain, you know, few icons in the business that you hope will do something, but you don't know if they will. And so she contributed to the book. I said, wow, now if we get more work like this, you know, this is going to be a big deal. You know, we're going to have some really nice pieces of art. And then we had people that I think like Matt, like I did not really know Matt, and I was blown away by his, and then it just kept flowing. And then one morning I was actually in a meeting, and I got a call really early from the syndicate that my kind of editor on the project was literally in tears because Bill Watterson had sent us a piece of art, which was his first work in 17 years or 16 years. And then the floodgates just, you know, it was like, it was on then, because I was like, well, if Bill Watterson's interested, you know, they want to know more about the project. And so the website, you know, I had emails literally constantly because people want to know about the project. They want to know, you know, was it really Bill Watterson? They want to know. And that was funny because it really hit the news circuit. And it was really, I get posts all over the world about people talking about it. And they thought it was a fake. And I was like, it's not a fake. I can guarantee you it's not a fake. And it was really, that's when it took off. And then, because of that, we started getting so many pieces of art that the publisher, when we fly out to Kansas City, just to help them go through the stack. I mean, it was like a stack when we got there, not open. And it was just, it was that. And that was Christmas. It was 3 days of hard Christmas work, but it was fun to open everything up.
So let's give some credit to the publisher and the syndicate.
Yeah, I emailed. So after Richard gave me his blessings, I emailed Lee Salem, who president of the syndicate, and he was also the editor of all the old folks like Watterson and Gary Larson from the Far Side. You know, he discovered all these people, and so he has, you know, great taste, obviously, because he did this book too, right? So he, it was really funny. He said, it's a really interesting idea. Give me like a week or so, and if you haven't heard back from me, you know, just remind me. And it's right before I came to Baltimore Con, it was like the morning I think I was leaving, I got an email from him. He said, by the way, you'll be hearing from the book division. We're going to publish your book. We want to be a part of this, you know, because we love Richard. He is our, you know, favorite cartoonist. And so it just went from there. Once I had their blessing, that we had a book, and this was the first show I started asking cartoonists to contribute. Which is probably where I asked Steve and Matt and here, probably every, you know, I guess everyone here.
There's been a few ancillary things, like there's a portfolio right there with a print by Nick Galifianakis, which Chris will be glad to sell you downstairs. But Roger, you also did another drawing for the print, right? It's not the same as you have in the book?
Yes, I did a piece for a Harry Crumb exclusive print. It was, there it is. It's you know, it's reading comic books.
So, notwithstanding the exclusivity, Chris, are we still selling those to people?
I'll sell anything to raise money.
So, okay. So Roger, how did you decide on that one, that nice traditional image?
I think it was actually Chris's suggestion to have them reading comic books. So, you know, I tried to insert the characters' personalities into it a little bit. So Petey's obviously anxious. And Alice is just laughing the fool head off.
Okay, well, let's ask a dorky question, and we'll start with Shannon at this end. And the dorky question is going to be, who's your favorite Team Cul-de-Sac character and why? Not Team Cul-de-Sac, your favorite Cul-de-Sac character. That's to give you entirely different answers. Yes, Chris's character. If you don't have one, it's okay, Shannon. You can just say you love everybody. Like, you know.
No, I'm just, it's one of those things where I'll end up showing my ignorance because I'm horrible with names.
You can say the little round-headed kid, whatever. That's the wrong script. But.
Well, actually, it's the banjo guy, but I didn't put him in my drawing.
Oh,
which I'm very
Fret? Upset. What's his name?
Tim.
Fretless? Tim Fretless? Fretwork.
Because the first time I saw that, I was like, because I'm a huge Bob Ross fan, and that's who it reminded me of. That's true. Fly up here, I'm not like having some kind of tick. But I love Bob Ross, and that's immediately who it reminded me of, because it was that kind of like, hey kids, you know? And I just love, and I wanted like more strips of him. I just wanted a whole strip based on him, because I just love that. And he's probably my favorite, just because of that attitude. And Richard captured it in a strip, which I didn't think anybody could do, because so much of that persona is the voice.
Voice, yeah.
And Richard captured it in a strip, which I didn't think was possible. And I just fell in love with that, but yeah, for some reason I didn't feel like I could pull it off in the drawings that I did in the book.
Okay. Dawn?
I think it's a tie between Petey and Mr. Danvers. I can't decide between the two. I love them both. I love but Petey's quirky character. He's just, you know, like everything makes him want to chew on his arm. So, like, it just cracks me up. That's what really, his character is what really made me like the comic a lot, because he's so different than any other character I've seen in syndicated comics, so I was kind of like, all right, Petey.
Richard will talk about how each of the characters has a facet of himself in there.
Well, I think
so
that's
you
very...
What you want to with Petey there. And just as an anecdote, the syndicate told him not to use Mr. Danders as much as he had been doing for the Washington Post, because they warned him that it would be easy for the animal to take over the entire strip and change the tone of it, the way Snoopy for so many years ended up being the center of Peanuts as opposed to Charlie Brown. So, back to favorite characters, Carol?
Well, I know Alice is very popular, and I think that her dialogue is very sharp, so I enjoy her, but I also am a big fan of the family car. Just the way it's drawn, it's so odd, and it's like, how does anyone even fit in there? Like, it's a strange looking car, and I like it, I dig it. It's my favorite character.
I like Mr. Danders hands down. It's just this dog head with these little limbs. It's just hilarious to me. It's the funniest thing. It just on its own as a doodle, it is hilarious. I think it's brilliant. So the whole strip's great, but I mean, as a design, that's just so silly and funny.
Okay, Matt?
Yeah, I think I like Mr. Danders too. But it's one of those things that I agree with Steve. When you look at it, you can't help but laugh. You know, it's one of those pictures. Like when I first saw it, like, what is that? Really, what is that? But I also, you know, like Alice and Petey, because something that Dawn said, you kind of see yourself a little bit, and I see myself a lot like kind of like Petey. When I get anxious, I get kind of fidgety and start just losing it. Where my wife is a lot like Alice. Kind of a little bit more carefree, and she kind of grounds me, so I can see us kind of both there a little bit. So it's interesting that you said that kind of Richard puts himself into those characters, because there's probably a little bit of us, of those characters in each one of us that we kind of identify.
I guess PD, just in terms of sheer recognition, you know, and seeing elements of PD in both of my kids as well. Actually, I'm seeing elements of Alice in both of my kids, but they're different elements. My kids have each got sort of composite bits of each of the characters, but they're different bits. So two little Frankensteins running around. But I do really like the other baby. Just a bizarre thing. Crawls across the back of the panel and goes, oh! Disappears. That's always funny for some reason. Having a character cross the background, you know, appearing from one door and going through another door. That's always funny, I don't know why.
The Otto Baby is actually one of Richard's favorites too, and on his cafe press site, he's done some t-shirts and mugs with the Otto Baby. I always found it a bit creepy, just like the kids. What's your favorite, Chris?
I would say I would have two. I really love Deal. I think Deal's like a great character. Probably because we have the same hairline. That's how I feel about life sometimes. I'm always just one step outside of my reality, my own reality, and I feel like that's how Dill is. And the other characters that I like that you don't see is actually Dill's brothers. I don't think anyone could create characters you've never seen as well as Richard. There's these brothers of Dill's that you find so interesting and you never see. How do you create characters that can take over a strip on gags and they're not there? And I think that's something we've never really seen before. Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting.
Okay. Don, you want me to do the last time?
Alice. Yeah, I only relate to girl characters. And I have to say the strip is compelling enough in terms of the personal recognition that I actually don't like painting, because I had an older brother who was just like that, and he made my life torture for years. So I like him now, but
Petey or your brother?
My brother.
I like them all. I mean, whatever one I'm reading at that moment is my favorite character. He just so perfectly captures the essence of everything he does. And I know people who do not like the strip. I've met them. And I've explained to them in great detail how it works and the intricacy of it and how he develops the characters so well. And they go, yeah, I still don't get it. It's something about being a cartoonist and having done this type of work and trying to develop a character and draw and render it. You just get to see how perfectly he does each. There's a line out that isn't necessary or a word that is miscalculated. It's just sheer perfection. On that note, I did used to chew my arm when I was a little boy.
Well, let's also carry that note, because one of the ways that cartoonists tend to talk about Richard is a cartoonist. Does anybody want to take a stab at why that would be a phrase that's used with him? I saw two people down at the end go boom, boom, boom.
Well, I think anytime you use that phrase for describing someone means that other people, other creators like him, really appreciate him. But a lot of his work might go over the heads of the common man, I guess you could say, someone who's not a creator. But, you know, it's you'll see it like for comedians, a comic's comic, you know, like a comedian that is just fearless and will stand up in the door and do anything, and half the crowd might get it, half the crowd would be like, what did I spend money on this for, you know? And but all the other comedians will just worship this person because they do what no one else is afraid to do. And I think, you know, with Richard, especially with the tone of his comics, we talk about Petey and all the, you know, all the type of characteristics to it. I think it's something that most people are not used to seeing on the comics page, and that's what makes us love it, you know. But I think that some people, like my mom, might be like, I don't get that, it's so weird, I don't understand. And that might be the reaction. I think that's what makes them.
I think what makes Richard's work so strong, and when you start talking about it, because I grew up in a musical family, my dad was a drummer, and you have musicians, that kind of thing. It's when someone is at such a high level of their craft that they can make something look effortless that you know, because you've tried to do it, is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
And other people, because they don't know what it takes to actually produce something like that or create that strip or to come up with the joke, they don't know how hard that is, so they don't get it, or they don't see what's beautiful about it, or what is so genius. There's some what the genius is in it. And those that try it every day and fight with it every day and want to strangle the cat because of it every day understand, my God, that how did he pull that off? How do you make that joke work with so little effort, or apparent, you know, visually looks like it's so little effort? And I think that's why creators really love his work.
You know, he's such a, the types of cartooning he does is so varied.
Mm-hmm.
We're just talking about cul-de-sac, but what he did with like
Richard
Almanac, and what he does when he does the caricatures, you know, for the New Yorker or the Post, to me that is amazing, because I think, at least myself, I tend to kind of do one type of style. So when I see somebody who can do this wonderful caricature and who can do like the one-line zingers and can do a more broad story, that really is stunning. Because I really feel like sometimes I'm in a corner and I see somebody just controlling the entire room.
If anything, it's just that he's just so unique. I mean, it's just that there's that J. Johansson, the comedian, has a joke about why he likes Liberace, because no one's ever going to be Liberace, but more so. And, and that's like Richard. I mean, there's not, you know, you can't be more Richard than that. I mean, it really is just awesome. It's not pretending to be anything else. It's not trying to do anything like anybody else did. It's just, I don't know where it came from, but totally unique, and I love it.
Let me say a couple things here. Some of us who live in the Washington area have gotten kind of blasé and spoiled because we've seen Richard in the Washington Post frequently every day of the Washington Post in a different section before he did the comic strip. He used to illustrate the magazine for him. He used to illustrate the food section.
Did he illustrate the last the weekly column, the last page of the weekend magazine?
Yeah, magazine.
Yeah.
Right.
Weingarten's
column. He used to. I think he drew the Post Hunt map for him or something like that one year. It was Dave Barry's end of the year column he used to illustrate
right.
for the magazine. So, and then he was doing Richard's Poor Almanac on Saturday or Sunday, whatever day they ended up running it. So a lot of us were like, he must be a factory. No. And actually, he's a perfectionist. Those of us who visited his basement studio when he was still drawing, and right now he's not able to, would see piles of roughs. He would rough stuff out in pencil, and then he would take translucent paper and start to redraw it, and then he'd throw that off to one side, and so there'd be five or six of those there, and just crumpled up all over the place. So what looks like a very sketchy line actually is the product of usually all night. He was staying up, he would start working at dinner time and stay up and FedEx it to the Post and the next morning back when FedEx would come by. So.
His trash can is nicer than most people's work you ever see.
Yeah, so we always steal stuff from his trash can.
I saw Russ yesterday in one of his drawers that could be published, and you know, you could just take the Russ and get published. It's amazing.
Yeah, and let's give people another behind the scenes thing. So around January, he started having Stacy Curtis ink for him, but that turned out not to work out. And you want to address that, or shall I?
Well, I guess mainly he needed help. he was having a hard time keeping up with deadlines. And so he decided he would write the story and do some roughs and send it to Stacy and let Stacy ink it. And Stacy asked for some tight roughs for the first couple of weeks. Well, Richard doesn't know what loose roughs are, so everything cannot be tight. But Richard really realized that he can't write the story and then turn it into a strip. It was a process of it all flowed together. You know, he had this rough idea, but it evolved from one panel to the next panel until he figured out what the joke was at the end. And it was one of the situations, that's why I think it just was ready to give up on it.
And let me just say, and that's why he's decided to end the strip, because he doesn't feel like he can do it nor work with anybody else.
And he loves Stacy's work. I mean, it was nothing against Stacy at all. It was totally for him to be able to write the strip. He had to have the pen in his hand for the process.
Okay, question.
There was about a month or so where some other creators did that. Or if you could talk about that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he wanted to do, he took some physical therapy called Big and Loud, where you're really using these big gestures of physical therapy and, you know, scream and all this. Really helps you with your motor skills, kind of redirects your brain. And he had to take time off to do that, hoping that would be something he could do and continue to strip. And so during that time, something that you don't see a lot, instead of running repeats, a lot of cartoonists was like, ooh, we want to drop for a week. So we had everyone from Michael Jancy to Mo Willems, who's a great children's book publisher, to...
I wasn't prepared for this question. Just going
So he had like 6 weeks of really great cartoonists filling in for him. And Pastis did a Sunday strip. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was fun to see different people. Lincoln Pierce from Big Nate, who's a humongous fan, was just like Mo Willems, you know, everyone's a fan, so he stopped that. So we had just 6 weeks worth of strips, and unfortunately, it helped for a little bit, and then came right back to the same point.
Although I will say that, apropos of the fans, Richard keeps getting artwork in the mail from other cartoonists, and you walk into his basement and you see a nice stack and you go, oh, that's not your work. Oh, look at that, look at that, look at that. So that's kind of, again, the cartoonist. Since we've started with questions, let's go ahead and see if anybody else. Bruce, who's known Richard longer than all of us.
I met him probably 33 years ago at an Artwood Smithsonian function where he brought in George Booth and a bunch of other people. And that's where I met Richard. But I know when I was talking with people like Keith Knight, you mentioned deadlines are not all that feasible for some cartoonists. There were a lot of art that showed up late. Is there any intention of doing a Cul-de-sac 2, Team Cul-de-sac 2 book?
There's a couple things.
I'm in.
Oh, you're in. We have some people volunteering right now. So we might do it a couple different ways. We might actually, there might be something else going on with Richard this year, a project. So what we wanted to do is see how he does it for the next month or so. But
this project would be more designed to get the money in Richard's hand as opposed to the research hands, since he basically lost his job coming in September.
Due to Parkinson's.
Right.
So we have to wait a couple months to see how Richard has some things going on in his life. He has to see how things works out, and then after that, there might be another project that some people want to work on, and then after that, there's an idea of maybe doing more of an auction, maybe once a year, with artwork to continue to raise money for the Michael J. Fox Foundation, where then we would also have a website to promote the art. I mean, we have a Facebook page and all that, but just have a website to promote the art, promote the incoming news about Parkinson's. And then work on another book as time goes along. This takes a lot of time, and I really appreciate everyone who donated art. This is fabulous. I mean, this is a highlight of my life, but, you know, and Mike was very nice to help me. The syndicate was great. Roger came through that day to do the print. But it took a lot of time, and my wife's ready to kill me. I have a 3.5-year-old, so she's even concerned about this other project that I'm in the process of working on. So, yes, we will, but we're working on it. So, yes, there'll be something else we just need to.
For the completist right now, on the Heritage website are two of Joe's other drawings. Nate Beeler's drawing, the former Washington Examiner cartoonist, didn't make it into the book. Cal did one which showed up on his website and hasn't given us the art yet, so at some point we'll be auctioning that, the Baltimore cartoonist. So I think there's about 6 or 8 pieces that exist currently that aren't in the book, one of which we need to find Cal and auction the darn thing off.
And there's a couple pieces that kind of disappeared. We're not sure if they were turned in or what, but we're going to have to say, piece from Hillary Price, who's in the book, we are searching for. There's a piece from Gary Trudeau, who's in the book, we're seeing if he even sent it in. So, you know, I think maybe he just sent a scan in there, and maybe one more person. So there's going to be actually some more art we will put up to.
This is just a big cockroach.
Oh, hey, no. I just don't like it.
Oh, not me.
It's a big one.
Yeah, that's kind of
beautiful.
Thank you.
That came
from England.
That was my
name.
That was a total
cul-de-sac
moment.
I just think
you want to run from the room.
Distraction.
I was almost on the chair.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Anybody want to tell any embarrassing Richard anecdotes?
He threw up on me.
That was lovely. I was actually there too. We were talking about selling his DNA. Part of the problem with Parkinson's is that all of your nervous system gets screwy, including swallowing. So he has a hard time eating at times now when his medicine is wearing off. So. Took a piece of meat that was too big and aimed it at Chris, and then we all laughed hysterically for 5 minutes since he didn't actually die at the table with us.
But we were all very nervous.
Yes. All right, I have an anecdote. Bill Watterson visited Richard recently. They had never met, but Watterson was a major fan of his. When he heard Richard was getting sicker and sicker, he volunteered to come out. So they spent a lot of time together in a mutual admiration society. And on the positive side, for collectors, Bill signed 5 of the books that Chris will be auctioning off at some point.
Wow.
So if anybody wanted a Bill Watterson signature, this is going to be one of those rare opportunities to get one.
This will be your only chance probably ever to get a book signed by Bill Watterson. And they're also signed by Richard, and they're, I think, signed by Nick Galifianakis, who we're all just hanging out this weekend. So,
any real names?
Sir?
Anybody famous sign it?
Yeah. Chris Parks will.
Steve, are you going to sign it?
And then you get
it. And won't let me touch it.
And so what we'll probably do, I hate to do the auction thing because it would be crazy prices. I'm probably going to do like $500 straight across the board. Maybe we'll go to the Robert J. Fox Foundation. There's 5. That's it. I don't think you'll ever see. If you want to know if it's really Bill Watterson's signature, this is it.
So let's clear that up finally then. You said you're going to pick a flat fee. Are you going to actually sell them if somebody walks up to your table today?
If someone walks up to my table today, you can, you know, if you want Bill Watterson, Richard Thompson, Nick Galifianakis, all these people, maybe these people, sign your book.
Or you can buy
that'll
$20.
At least
or you are a 3-yard edition. I'm not a 3-yard edition, but if you want one signed by Richard and Bill, this is it.
And you get the roach for free.
Yeah, right. Just press it on the page.
Use it as a bookmark after a while.
And if you want the book, I have these 3 here, and actually only 14 other ones downstairs. That's all I brought with me because I was flying. And my main purpose of the trip is to get Richard and Bill together, so we bring all the books.
So you can still buy them from his website online. And Richard's Poor Almanac collection is being sold through One More Page Books, which is Richard's local bookstore. And when he's feeling good, he signs those for them. So you can probably get a signed copy from them. And he put that up on his Richard's Poor Almanac blog recently, their address and phone number.
But they are going fast because they've been out of print, and he had 400 copies, and so in a week, I think, they went through that.
Or they
sold like 40 or 50, and they've just, last night, they asked for another 50 copies, I think they've already sold, so.
Okay, so yeah, it's going fast. before Richard pulled these out of his basement, was going for some ridiculous amount on eBay.
$900 on eBay.
Right. So, or you can just buy a lot of back issues of Washington Post to make your own.
Any other questions?
Anybody else want to say anything?
Audience?
Anybody want to break down into tears?
Because I've done that a lot, so.
Yeah, but you're a softie. I also wouldn't have done this.
Just say thank you, Chris.
Yeah, I'd like to.